through and look for a planet name. Coruscant? Sure.
I was thinking of Kamino. I like, Kamino's my favorite.
All right, sure. Kamino. This is Millennial Canon. I'm Kira.
I'm Adam. I like Kamino because it's all, like, rainy, and it's, like, a nice little vibe. There used to be, like, a little YouTube, like, you know, those, like, lo-fi hip-hop, like, 24/7 mm-hmm. streams. There used to be one of Kamino where it's just, like, rain hitting the window on Kamino, and I used to, like, fall asleep to that a lot, like, in 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. If anyone remembers that or happens to be the one that run it, bring it back. I would totally use it every night if it was brought back.
That sounds kind of nice.
It was really nice.
I really like, you know, like, vibe, like, rain, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. I feel like it's always, like, stuff that's, like, familiar to you, too. Like, that for me was, like, I used to listen to Animal Crossing Wild World music when I was, like, falling asleep, and it would just immediately, like, put me to sleep.
Yeah.
Or, like, rainy day Animal Crossing music with rain noises.
Yeah, I did a lot of Star Wars, like, kind of music like that, where, because they had like a lot of like Star Wars themed like 24/7 YouTube channels, and I just put it on my TV, and like there was one where it was like studying at the Jedi Temple, like lo-fi
lo-fi hip-hop. Beats to study at the Jedi Temple too.
No, it's literally that. I think that's probably one that's still active. It's like Ahsoka, and she's like, you know, it's just like her sitting, it's like the same thing as the actual lo-fi thing where, you know, it's her mm. and the cat at the desk, but it's Ahsoka mm-hmm. and like the oh god, what's it called, like the low cat or something. Mm-hmm. You can see like a Galaxy's Edge, but yeah. So yeah, those, it's a niche brand, but one that I find very comforting. And as we know, Star Wars music is very very quintessential, so
mm-hmm.
But anyways, yeah, Attack of the Clones, to Kira's amazement, the second part of our series.
Listen, first of all, I'm all glub shadowed out. Today's George Lucas's birthday that we're recording this. I'm accidentally wearing a Lucasfilm sweater today. I did not mean to. And then when we release it, it'll be the, I wrote it down, the 16th anniversary of this movie coming out.
Hell yeah. This is a, it's, I mean, wait, no. Wait, you said 16th?
Yeah.
No.
No.
No. No, it's definitely not. I was like, wait.
Oh, no, wait. No. Oh, I wrote the 16th is the anniversary of it.
Okay, yeah.
Ignore me. I didn't sleep for the last like 3 days.
I was like, wait a second. I can't read my own writing. It would be 22 years this month, though. So, yeah, by the time it comes out, it would be, 22 years, which is... kind of nuts, because with The Phantom Menace, we kind of said that, like, oh, you know, it feels nostalgic, but at the same time, I wasn't really, like, a conscious human being when it came out. So, you know, it's not that crazy to me. But this one, I mean, I didn't see it in theaters, but I do have more memories with it, like, being a thing. So I do feel, like, a little bit older. And when Revenge of the Sith hits 20 next year, that's gonna sting for me personally, but
yeah.
So
I told you I had something funny to say, that I have mm-hmm. a joke for tonight. Mm-hmm. Let me just say, gotta say it. Count Dooku.
Count Dooku. You said Big Dooku this time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Count Dooku.
Count. No, I used to call him Count Dookie.
Oh, yeah, that works too. You upstaged me. All right, let's wrap it up.
I used to call him Count Dookie when I was a kid. This movie, I think, because I said it last week, where Phantom Menace was the one that I watched the least out of all the prequels, because there's a lot of elements of that movie I like, and I would say I probably appreciate it even more as an adult. It was one that also had like a lot of very slow parts for me as a kid. And mm-hmm. It was, out of the three movies, the one that I revisited the least. And if I did, I admittedly jumped to certain scenes just because I liked those scenes more than other scenes. Because believe it or not, 6-year-old Adam was not interested in tax trade regulations and everything. He just wanted to see lightsabers. This movie, though, really sparked my, like, I wouldn't say it sparked my obsession with Jedi and Star Wars. I think that was more safer than the Sith. But this one did make me more interested in, like, the world of the Jedi and, like, the Jedi Temple and, like, how, like, cool that is to me. Like, even, like, this is very specific, but, like, when Obi-Wan, like, goes to, like, the archival library, just, like, the aesthetic of, like, all the, like, digital books in the background, and, like, it's so massive and, like, just vast, that space. It's just, like, there's so much, like, detail in the world building. And I remember, like, watching this movie when I was a kid and just, like, watching, like, every little detail in the background and finding it to be so cool. I was definitely too young to see this in a theater, but I do, like, remember watching it when I, like, the first time I saw it was, like, on my living room floor. I mean, I have to assume it's on DVD at that point, but I remember, like, how much I loved it. Like, the second, like, the whole thing with the assassin, like, the chase scene happens, like, I just was so locked in from that point. And I really loved this movie when I was a kid. I thought it was so cool. And it really held me over a lot until Revenge of the Sith came out. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's as formative to me as Revenge of the Sith, but it did a lot for me. You know, it was pretty much the first Star Wars movie to an extent that I was obsessed with and was, like, really into.
Yeah, this was also, I feel like this was the one that I least kind of, like, watched or, like, connect to anything. Again, similar to every single other, like, movie that we cover on here, my association with it is Lego Star Wars. but also, you and I are both theme park kids people. This is definitely something that I associate with theme parks. I would say this and Phantom Menace, simply because Star Tours, I feel like, right, I'm always getting prequel planets on Star Tours. And yeah, you can, like, you can tell, like, the difference in quality of the footage on the screen, in terms of, like, if it looks like a video game cutscene or, like, an actual, like, movie.
Yeah.
Not saying, like, anything about the quality of the movie, but it's just, like, the theme park technology that they had at the time.
Right.
But I definitely, like, pre-Galaxy's Edge, like, Star Wars presence in the parks, I feel like, was very, like, prequel heavy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just associate, similar to Phantom Menace also, just, like, action figures, stuff like that. Just, I feel like I was just always around, like, merchandise of this. Yeah. And also, I vividly remember, we will get to it, when Yoda goes fucking crazy at the end.
Oh, yeah, I was watching with Victoria, and I was, like, right before it happened, I was, like, okay, I'm, like, what's about to happen, I don't know if it's gonna hold up visually, but it was my favorite thing ever when I was
it kind of does. It kind of goes crazy.
Oh, he goes crazy, and, she said something like, she's like, his fake ass, he's, like, limping, and then he does that the whole movie, like,
it's so funny. It's like the equivalent of, like, when Grandpa Joe, like, jumps out of bed in Willy Wonka and, oh, like, God, just fucks everything up, and it's like, oh, you could walk the whole time.
Dude, I was just listening, do you know that, do you know this about me, that I was in, the only time I've acted in a school play was in Willy Wonka, and I was Grandpa Joe. And I had to do that song where I, like, jumped out of bed. There's pictures and a video somewhere, but that's for somebody else to find in me. For me,
that's for the Patreon.
That's for me to try to bury one day if it ever comes to light. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's I had to like preface it like as it was happening because I was like giggling to myself. I was like, I know it's about to happen, and I don't know how it's gonna look. But when I was a kid, it was the sickest thing ever. Because that was the moment to me where I became like Yoda obsessed. Like I've always loved Yoda. Yoda's like pretty much always been my favorite Jedi. I have a Yoda on my keys. I do not have any keychains except for one, which is a Lego Yoda that I got at the Lego shop at Disney Springs. And I've had him for like 4 years now, and he's not going anywhere. He's my pride and joy. But
the Lego keychains are like my favorite things in the world.
I love them. I lied. I have two. I have a Victoria in Lego form, and I have I have Yoda. So those are my two favorite people.
My favorite Lego guy of all time is the corn cob, and I have him on my keys.
You mean Corn Blart Mall Cop?
Him.
Yeah, he's corn, on my keys. Corn Blart.
Corn Blart. And then I have a big chunky Mike Myers. But hell yeah. Michael Myers, not Mike Myers.
Mike Myers.
A little Lego sidetrack there.
No, I mean, well, Lego and Star Wars is very synonymous, as we know. Yeah.
You and I, we're both, like, Lego freaks, huh? Like,
yeah, I mean, Lego's very, like, very heavily part of my childhood. Like, I know we talked about it a lot on the Crystal Skull episode, but, like, same with Indiana Jones. Like, I feel like that's a very niche-ier. Like, a lot of people don't... like really remember Lego Indiana Jones a lot.
Yeah, like, the best video game I've ever played in my life, and every single like Nintendo Direct I'm like, they're gonna remaster it, and like why would they? Like I really had hopes that the new Indiana Jones movie, they would be like, okay, like we're just gonna put out the old game, like they don't even need to put out like a new one. I want it so bad.
I had the same thing with like the sets too, because I thought they would put out like new sets, but the only new thing they have is that which admittedly it is cool, but they have like the boulder scene from Raiders like remastered on the Lego set, and I do want it because it's like the whole scene like where they have it like on a platform, so it's like the scene kind of like frozen in real time. I do I really want it. Like if I could pick like five Legos to have and never buy another one again, that would be in the five. But I do have PlayStation Plus right now, and they do have the Lego Indiana Jones in the cloud library, so I can play it whenever I want, but I agree, I do want, like, a remastered version of it, because there are times where I'm playing it, and I'm just like, it's still kind of, like, I mean, it's nice to play, like, PS2 games uncompromised, and, like, just feel, like, they feel PS2, but at the same time, it would be nice to have, like, a remaster, because... people criticize the Skywalker saga, and like I could see, you know, complaints here and there, but for the most part, it's a gorgeous looking game, and they really did a great job with like adding to it. I think it's really well done. Lego and Star Wars, it's very symbiotic. It's like, especially for kids our age, like people our age that grew up with it, because for a lot of us, that was the introduction to it, or at least. After the prequels were over, I feel like Lego Star Wars kept it going for a while too, if that makes sense. Like even after Revenge of the Sith came out, like I was still buying Lego Star Wars sets like deep into like 2009, 2010. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I was still doing that. So like, I don't know. That and the Clone Wars, I think, like kept my like love of Star Wars like alive until like the Disney era started.
Yeah. Do you know about, I mean, I'm sure, Star Wars Weekends at Disney?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Where they would do, like, the fucked up, like, dance party.
they have, like, fucking Padme and, like, they have, like...
like, singing, like, Spice Girls and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they do like, Slave Leia during Madonna or something. It was terrible. It was, I mean... it's like objectively bad, but there is a part of me that kind of
like, I kind of miss it.
Yeah, like it's hard to explain, like, because I mean, especially me growing up in Orlando, like there were like a lot of commercials for it too, and like because they would really advertise the hell out of it, And you know, they made, especially like made the fourth weekend, like all that stuff, like it was really a big thing. But yeah, no, I remember Star Wars weekends. And honestly, again, I think the reason why I kind of miss it to an extent is because now you can go to Disney and Star Wars is just, you know, it's firmly there. Not that it has, I mean, because Star Tours has always been there, you know, but, and you know, there's always been like a Star Wars presence in the parks, like relatively, but there is something about like a designated weekend where it's just like, it's just purely Star Wars. And that's cool to me, you know? And I feel like you could take that analogy and run with it as to like the Disneyfication of Star Wars as a whole, where you kind of take away the specialty of, you know, the once a year type specialty, and you just like pan it out to where it like no longer feels special anymore. Which, you know, that's for another time, but yeah, I don't know.
So we got this one. I don't know, do you want to go into the movie? I don't know.
I mean, the movie itself, I was kind of curious how it would hold up because I have not rewatched it in a while. I think I rewatched it once before Rise of Skywalker came out, and I rewatched it before Force Awakens. But before that, I had like a weird relationship with it where, like I said, I really liked it when I was a kid. And then I went through like the 2010s where, again, as we discussed last week, these prequels were really ripped to shreds. The first one was a lot, I think, and relatively more so than this one. But this one did get a really bad end of it because, like, when everyone would like point out like how bad Hayden Christensen is in these movies, they would specifically use this movie. And I mean, he's not great, so I can't, you know, I can't exactly argue that. But I don't know. So like, you know, I went through the wave of like being like, oh man, these movies kind of suck, even though I liked them as a kid. And now I've come kind of full circle and I'm like, no, I like them. I don't know. I like them. I don't know. There's just something about it. Like, I think there's some really slow stuff in the middle. Like, especially like with everything with Padme and Anakin, is some of it's actually pretty cringe. But there's some other stuff that I really love, like all the Jedi stuff. And especially everything with Obi-Wan and the clones and like the entire third act, I think, is like fantastic. So yeah, it's kind of it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but overall I'm pretty positive on it.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen this honestly since I was a kid. It's like really hard for me to like figure out like when the hell the last time I watched something all the way through was with like any of the Star Wars movies, because it's just kind of the thing where I'm like, I feel like Star Wars is just consistently on somewhere in the background always, like,
yeah.
Even just like in my brain,
yeah.
Like, I feel like all I ever see anywhere is Star Wars. But it's definitely like, I don't know, I find this sometimes with like sequels or like the second one in a trilogy or something, it feels like a lot of like setup or kind of like a way to segue from the first one to the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like that, but also not really, because there's such a big time jump between the first one and the second one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, there's something about this one that like I'm not wild about, and it is pretty action heavy, but for some reason that makes it feel almost like slower to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me to like pin down. Like, I don't not like it. I think it's like really good. But I definitely, I don't know. Yeah.
No, I get it. Because like it is very like exposition heavy. And honestly, the prequels as a whole are, in a way that I think, you know, Last Jedi avoided doing, and especially the original trilogy, you know what I mean? Because Last Jedi, in every sense of the word, could have been that, but it just like was not.
It's just all. Like the best movie ever made.
It's just incredible. but and you know, the original trilogy, like Empire, does not do that at all. But this one, it does. It's very you know, plot heavy. I found myself enjoying that more so this time around, just because I realized in the first, when I was rewatching the first one in theaters last week, I was like, okay, I actually do kind of enjoy Star Wars politics, and I like all the like little, you know, discussions and all that stuff. Like, and so to have that kind of carry over to this one, I thought it was even more interesting in this one. Like, for example, like everything with like the Death Star and like finding out that like, you know, just how deep like the Sith influence goes, and like how corrupt all the fractions of the government are, and I don't know, like Obi-Wan's little investigation and like finding like, and like, I don't know, it's all very like setup heavy, and it's definitely, because I don't know how far back they were playing that Clone Wars TV show, but it very much feels like that they're trying to like set that up too in this movie.
Oh yeah, literally, like the last line of the movie goes fucking hard. Begun the Clone War has. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
I mean, it's that's one thing that's great about that is that the way that Revenge of the Sith begins, it, you don't have to watch that show at all to feel the impact of the Clone Wars. You know what I mean? But if you do watch the Clone Wars, if you're a kid and you use it as like a bridge between 2 and 3, it's perfect because you fully get the full war in that show, you know. So in both ways, like either however you do it, it works as an audience member. So I get where you're coming from, but I do kind of enjoy it. But again, that's just like that. I don't think your complaint about that is completely uncommon though, because I think that's just generally what a lot of people feel towards these movies, is that there's a lot of cool shit, but you know, it does get kind of like bogged down sometimes by like, you know, all of his big ideas and like trying to condense that into like a cohesive movie. Like, it doesn't always work in his favor. And even I say that as somewhat of an apologist. Like, objectively, like, even my love aside, like, there are some objective, like, pacing and structural issues here.
Yeah, I think also it's very interesting how you could, like, clearly see what they tried to, like, quote-unquote like fix from the first movie.
Yeah,
like all of a sudden Jar Jar is just like a diplomat senator,
which is so funny. Oh my god,
he's okay. Like, he's like Anakin's confidant, like dead serious, when Anakin's like, she barely even recognized me, Jar Jar. Like,
I laughed so hard watching that on Saturday because he's just such a, like, first of all, okay, Anakin in this movie is such a little, like, incel. It's, like, so funny. He's so, like, and the thing is, I don't really blame Hayden Christensen for a lot of this. And honestly, a lot of it is just George Lucas's writing style meshing with Christensen's performance. Because I think anyone blaming him entirely, it, you know, I don't think there's a way to sell a lot of these lines, like, with a straight face. Like, I think some of it is just objectively, like, because there are scenes between, like, him and Natalie Portman where it feels like they're in two completely different movies. Natalie Portman is, like, giving a genuine, thoughtful performance. And there are scenes where she looks genuinely confused on how to respond to him. Like, like, their acting styles are so wildly different. And the movie is telling you that they're falling in love. But you're, like, watching it and you're, like, It almost, like, feels like comedic at points, because there's no way where they would, like, end up together, like, because of how, like, just, like, he's such a sociopath in this movie.
Yeah.
So he's so, like, easily, like, worked up, and he's so, I feel that way for, like, a lot of this movie, but then, somehow, they get to the ending. And, like, they're about to be, like, brought up to, like, the gladiator arena. And when she's like, I love you dearly. And I'm like, oh, wait, I feel it. So I don't know. I, like, yeah. It goes both ways.
I mean, I think definitely, like, the, like, it is a tragic love story. Like, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, he is kind of playing it like an incel. But if you think about it, he kind of is a little incel-y. Like, if it were the 2020s, he would be, like, on forums, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, it's very, like, tragic, and, like, we know where he's gonna end up, and I think that's what, like, makes, like, I don't know, it's kind of genius, like, the way it was, like, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, because, like, just seeing the small child of Anakin, which everyone thinks is annoying, but I don't know, in retrospect it just makes it like so sad that he's just like this little kid who's like and then like it's like oh okay and he just slowly becomes like
you know
it makes it all the more sad, and I think that kind of adds a lot of depth to his performance that like a lot of people kind of like clown on him for, but I think it's good.
I think in this one some of the criticism is valid. I think he does have some like really rough spots with like line delivery and like, but again, I go back to the fact that I think there are some just like objectively bad lines here too, where I don't even think like the best actor could really salvage some of these lines. To me in this movie, it feels like Lucas really freaked out with like the lore, and he really like went all in on like the storytelling and the mythology, and a lot of that stuff is great. But some of the dialogue and character choices in this movie do kind of falter because of that. And you mix that with like a new performance from Hayden Christensen, who's kind of an up and comer at this point, and you get mixed results at times. So I don't necessarily blame him. And honestly, Revenge of the Sith, his performance was fantastic in that. So I know it's not about him. And even the Obi-Wan show, he's great in, and there's plenty of other non-Star Wars movies that he's proven his worth with. So he's great. It's just, this was just a weird middle ground of issues, I think, at some points, because this movie is like, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think this is kind of like, other than The Rise of Skywalker, I would say this is like the most disliked Star Wars movie, I would say. Well, Last Jedi, actually, probably, surprisingly, but I don't really take that with any, you know, merit. But this is on the lower tier, and I think it's for those reasons that it's kind of, you know, a little stilted and awkward at times. But on the flip side, there's, like, things I really like about it. Like, everything with, like, Obi-Wan in this movie, I really love. Like, his little, like, investigation into, like, where the like what the clones are, what's on Kamino, where this bounty hunter is coming from, why they're targeting, you know, Padme. I really like all that stuff because it's so mysterious, and it's like very like kind of like noir driven. Like, even like, because like the opening like chase scene like with the bounty hunter is so good, like through the city, and then like there's like all those like neon signs behind them, and it just feels like very like Blade Runner-esque.
I do like a space city. I think that's really cool.
It's so cool. And like honestly, like the sound effects and like the visuals of like the, like, you know, the hover cars are just like, it's so satisfying. It's really, really cool. And I don't know, there's just something about it, like the aesthetic of like, you know, Coruscant at night is just like, I loved it when I was a kid, and I still do today. But like even like down to like just like he has a connection with this diner owner, and he's somehow like a former war buddy who knows how to like track somebody with ammunition or something. And it's like, okay, like there's just somebody like it's such a like a little private detective side quest for Obi-Wan that I find so like, I don't know, I love it. I love that part of this movie.
What's his name? Like Dexter?
Dexter Jester.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah. He's great. I love that it's just a diner. And yeah. I love that the waitresses are the flight attendants from Star Tours.
Yeah, and what's his name? I don't think it's the same. I think it's the same species, but the guy that was in the pod race with Annie in the first movie.
Oh, Sebulba.
I don't know if it's Sebulba or, because I think does he die in Phantom Menace? I can't remember when he crashes.
Probably. That was a pretty
It was about to crash, but the same species is like sitting right behind Obi-Wan in the diner. But when I was a kid, I used to think that was Spoil because I was like, oh, he's still alive. But now I'm like, well, he's probably actually dead. Because when I'm my stupid ass kid is like, there can only be one. So if it's that guy, that's the guy. And there's no other guys. There's no other guys like him. That's why when Newt Gunray gets like, you know, I'm like, no, not Newt. Or, you know, when Max Shreve or something. Yeah. But anyways.
When Glub Shiddo, yeah.
When Glub Shiddo bites it. There can only be one Glub Shiddo. But yeah, I like that part of it. But there's just, like, I do think there's some really, like, slow moments in the middle that kind of, like, drag it down at times. Because a lot of it, like, when they get to the little planet, they go to, okay, what's her home planet's name? I forgot.
Is it shit. Coruscant?
No, Coruscant's that's the Jedi planet. Is it Naboo? I think it's Naboo.
Naboo
is so they're like on Naboo because, you know, she's trying to stay away from she's trying to be safe from all the assassins trying to kill her and everything. And it's not even the romance that ruins it for me, even though it is kind of stilted at times. It's just the pacing in these scenes are really slow. And it feels like every scene kind of like repeats itself. Like it's like kind of it begins as like a kind of a romantic sweeping moment. But, you know, it's undercut by like a hint of like sadness or anger on Anakin's behalf. And I just feel like it kind of repeats itself like every time it happens.
Yeah,
which kind of weighs it down at times, but it's not necessarily bad. It's just like a little bit slow compared to everything else.
Yeah.
But I think after that, though, like everything, like when they get off that planet, it's like, I don't know. It's just like top tier Star Wars for me at that point.
Yeah, I really think that. I like the Jango Fett situation. I always thought that like he was very cool. Him and Boba Fett were very cool for some reason. I don't know why, but like in the back of my mind, I feel like I just always was like, oh my God.
Like, yeah, I mean,
I don't
know. Jango's that guy. I used to have a Jango Fett action figure when I was a kid. And yeah, I was really, really. I remember I wanted to be Jango Fett for Halloween in 2003. Mm-hmm. And they would, like, I just could not find a costume because it was, you know, completely sold out at, like, Party City. but I really loved Jango when I was a kid. Like, I thought he was, like, the coolest dude. And even when I was a kid, like, even when I knew who Boba Fett was, I still preferred Jango because I thought the costume was cooler. Like, just the pure blue and silver and the black. Like, I thought that was dope as hell when I was a kid. And, like, the asteroid scene where, like, you know, he's chasing with Obi-Wan. I thought that was, like, so fun when I was a kid. So, yeah, but, like, one of my favorite scenes of the movie is, like, when they're outside of Kamino and, you know, they're fighting Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's just something about, like, a rainy planet and, the constant crashing of the waves. Like, I just find that so, like... Well, it's one satisfying, but I also find it like scary. Like there's a like inherent danger, just like so much water, like a planet completely covered in water. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that scene that just gives me so much anxiety, like every time I watch it. And I find that to be just very effective.
Yeah.
That's something about like these movies that he really does well is like he understands like elements, if that makes sense. Like, especially in the third one, like, Mustafar and the lava and everything. Like, he just, like, he knows how to, like, make things feel very hot, warm. Like, he can just textualize it and make it feel very, like, tangible and threatening and, like, vast, which I like.
Yeah, it's very cool, like, in the world building, how distinct and, like, different every planet feels.
Yeah.
So you can just, like, this is gonna sound, like, so, like, stupid... But, like, you can really, like, set apart, like, where they are and, like,
yeah,
what, like, I don't know. It makes it, like, easier to follow, I guess. Like, I really, like, I was, like, joking about it, like, last episode and, like, kind of this episode. It's, like, really hard for me to follow, like, any, like, sci-fi or, like, fantasy or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, like, I don't struggle as much with Star Wars. And, like, I find it more fun because every, like, planet and every, like, species and stuff is, like, so different.
Right.
That, like, it makes it a lot easier to follow.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, that's part of why I, like, fell in love with Star Wars as a kid, is because, you know, even when a movie isn't going on, like, you can kind of, whether it's, like, Lego Star Wars or, like, just the video games or, like, the Clone Wars TV show, which, you know, I think the TV shows did a great job at, like, expanding, like, these little planets. Like, you get to, like, kind of, in those shows, like, explore, like, the ecosystem and, like, the politics of each individual planet. Which I thought was always cool as a kid. So that's why I have, like, so many, like, stupid facts about, like, like, a random planets or something. Or I probably know, like, way more about Jar Jar than I, like, need to in my adult life because I watched the Clone Wars as a kid. But I don't know. There's just something I find so, like, fascinating and, like, calming about, like, the world of Star Wars and all the, like, little planets underneath it. And I think this one in particular, I don't know, like, the prequel planets especially, like, I mean, I've already said, like, Coruscant is probably, like, one of my favorite planets. I just love the, like, aesthetic of it. Like, the way the Jedi, like, temple looks, it's just so cool to me. And, like, also, like, when any, like, exterior shot of the planet, like, the way it's, like, kind of like a darkish gray purple planet, but you can see all the, like, building. So, like, it looks like Earth, but, like, way more, like, orange, like, with the, like, you know, the lights and everything. Like, it's so, like, eerie from afar. Like, it's one of, like, it's really just a striking, like, design. But, like, same thing with, like, Kamino. Like, I just, like, find it really beautiful. But then, like, Naboo, like, the way they clearly shoot that on location in this movie, like, when they first arrived to Naboo and they're, like, literally, like, on a ferry, and you can tell they shot that, like, on a real lake, on a, like, a real, like, lakeside house. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of that goes a long way because, like, all this feels, like, very, like, tangible, and, like, you know, it just feels, like, very I don't know, it just feels realistic to me, which I love.
Yeah, there's actually, like, a lot of places that you can, like, go visit that are Star Wars, like, locations. Like, I know that in the desert, I can't remember if it's Abu Dhabi or Dubai, but you can, like, go to where Tatooine is, and that's definitely something that, like, I would want to do. Also, you can go to Luke's Island in Ireland.
Right,
that's,
yeah,
something I always wanted to do. Yeah, you have to take a boat there.
I would love that.
Yeah, there's just, like, a bunch of different places that you can, like, go visit the physical, like, location of, like, these fake planets. It's kind of amazing.
I know, Victoria was telling me, unless she just completely lied to me, but Return of the Jedi, Endor was just shot in, like, the forests of California.
Yeah.
Because when we were watching Rise of the Planet of the Apes recently, and like, a big set piece in that movie takes place in, like, that same forest, and she was telling me that, like, oh, like, that national park is where they shot, like, Return of the Jedi, and she's, yeah, like, been there and stuff. And I was like, oh shit, I would not have, like, but it makes sense, like, when you're watching, because you're like, oh, this does feel like a national park, like, mm-hmm. it really does. But it's kind of cool that he can take, like, real landscapes and, like, places, and, you know, that extends also to, like, the Disney movies too. Like, I think, you know, for all the shit that they get, especially Rise of Skywalker, all of them, even Rogue One, Solo, all of them, they all do make an effort to, like, shoot on location and, like, have, like, practical effects and makeup and, like, droids and all these things. And I do really love that that has never been lost in any Star Wars movie. And that's something to admire, I think.
I agree. I think that, like, a lot of movies are, like, blue screen, green screen hell, but I think specifically the movies of Star Wars, like you said, have held on to that. I think that I forget what it's called. What is it called? Like the void? No, the
it's the volume. The volume. Yeah.
I think that kind of like fucked up a lot, because I think in the beginning it was like, oh my god, this is amazing, like this is insane.
Yeah.
And like now it's just kind of like, oh, so we're just gonna use that for everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, I mean, the great thing about the volume originally was that, I mean, the only time people were really blown away by it was the first season of The Mandalorian, where they actually used it pretty well, where they built like a full set, but it was just the background. You know what I mean? Like, so it was just kind of like the sky. But then they fully built a whole other set around that. Like, everything else is real. You know what I mean? So it was like, okay, the argument is that like that's better than green screen because it's a physical, like, you know, skyline that the actors can act with, right? But then, you know, and then the Batman obviously did it greatly because, you know, the whole like skyscraper sequence with like him and Catwoman is just beautiful. And when you find out that's the volume, you're like, oh shit, wow. But then, like, you know, when the like later seasons of The Mandalorian like kind of taken a step forward, we're like, okay, there's like entire sequences that are generated with the volume, and like Thor Love and Thunder, and especially like Quantumania and all that shit, like it's just, it's so like, there's not even like a hint of realism. There's no sets. It's just pure the volume. And it just like, you lose any sense of authenticity with it, where it just like, and again, I keep saying the word like tangible, but like, it's just, there's something about it where like, if you don't believe what you're seeing, you feel no stakes, you feel no attachment to anything happening.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like any attachment, at what point does it just become like the same as like watching like a, I don't know, like a Michael Bay, or like, I don't know, just like a cartoon at that point. You know what I mean? Like just like a nonsense, like fucking like Tom and Jerry hit up the head with the frying pan. Like there's no subtext at that point. It's just like the like noise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But yeah. I think
was smart.
Oh, you're good.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
Oh, you're good. But yeah, I mean, again, like, yeah, all the planets in this are really cool, and I think this has like the best use of it out of like all the prequels, surprisingly. Although I mean, Revenge of the Sith is pretty good too with the planets, but you know, there are some like good like character moments too. Like I think like everything with like Anakin's mom is like super, I mean, it's tragic, but like that is like a scene where I think he does really good in it. And the score in that scene where he's like on this, like on the speeder bike is just like really top notch.
Right before that, there's a shot, I think it's when they're on Tatooine, when him and Padme like separate for like him to go like find his mom or whatever. And there's a shot that's like their shadows against like a wall and like the sand. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is like the most interesting shot in all of Star Wars. I don't know why, like, but I'm like so captivated by that, and I feel like I'm gonna be thinking about that like forever. Like,
yeah, no,
of her being like, don't leave, and it's just like they're like silhouettes. I don't know why, I just,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really interesting like shots throughout this movie that are just like, again, George Lucas, he's just like, he's a fantastic director. I mean, he's really, really great at his craft. To the fact of, like, he hasn't made a movie, I think, since Revenge of the Sith, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's a travesty. That's
just really hanging. I mean, he seems pretty content.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not, selfishly, I mean, it's a travesty because
no, the state I know, of the industry.
And he's, I'm happy for him, but I feel like, selfishly, we deserve we deserve something. We deserve his talents.
Listen, like, even beyond Star Wars, like, I love, like, American Graffiti.
I've never actually seen it. I need to, though.
Oh my god, it's so good. There's like such like an energy to it that like I can't even like describe. Like there's like a scene in it where it's like a bunch of kids not like pranking. Like it's hard to explain, but like I feel like it's like something that's like so ingrained in my mind as like something that is so creatively inspiring to me. Like I'm just gonna like go off like I don't know. Like I feel like I love when like things feel like memories and feel like tangible and stuff, and there are moments in like After Sun and like Fire Walk With Me and stuff. And those are like very like sad. But I feel like there's a moment in American Graffiti where he shows something that like feels almost like a happy and like joyful memory. That you're just like, oh, did he like pull that from like my childhood or something? And it's like, no, he's just like an amazing director that like knows how to capture something. Like it's really hard to explain. I don't
Yeah, I
know.
mean, I going off that, like, I think that's why I would say, like, in my top like five favorite shots in all of cinema is, it's very generic, but the scene in A New Hope where he's looking at the binary suns on Tatooine, there's just something about that moment matched with like John Williams' score where, yeah, I mean, it's a great scene in the context of what it means to Luke Skywalker and his journey in that movie and also the trilogy, but also like just what that scene like represents as a whole, like how it like represents just like longing and like, finding a sense of belonging and like a place in the world and also looking beyond yourself and, potential for the universe. Like it's just like it's so beautiful, and what he's able to convey with like just someone staring at the sun is like it's incredible. And like to see the parallels between those movies and the prequels and the imagery that he's able to inspire. I mean, like I said, going back to like the speeder bike scene in this movie, like the way it amplifies when he finds out that his mom is, taken by the Tusken Raiders, and the use of imagery in that scene where he's like speeding, John Williams' score is really kicking off, and the sun's getting lower, the sky is getting darker, like the way he evokes emotion through imagery, color, sound, like he really knows how to utilize all that stuff perfectly to effectively create like mood and atmosphere and just pure emotion in a way that I think a lot of other directors, I'm not saying they can't do, but they can't do it the way he does it. Like he's simply on another level with that stuff. And I think a lot of people, and yes, there are issues with the prequels, but I think within that like 2000s, 2010 rage of like trying to tear them down, like CinemaSins style, they've really lost sight of like how amazing a lot of it is in the long run, because a lot of this is just kind of like watching a maestro at his peak. You know what I mean? Like he's really just full tilt, like I have all the money to do whatever I want and I'm gonna create a full vision here, and I'm gonna do that, and he does it. It's really impressive to watch. Like even, I mean, and then I love also, on the flip side to that, where he goes full force with the emotion, the energy, the music, the intensity. When he's holding his mom in his arms when she's dying, he lets the moments get like very quiet. You know what I mean? Like he can settle down too, which I really appreciate. Like, so he just balances it all so perfectly, because that scene makes me cry like every time I watch it. I mean, it's going to your point, like how this guy ends up. The deep irony, and tragedy of Anakin Skywalker is everything he tries to avoid in his life, he could have avoided if he just went about things in a different way. And there is a deep tragedy there of like he did become a Jedi and he does have the power to save her, but he's just like a minute late. He's like barely late. And that's way more of a discussion for next week's episode, Revenge of the Sith, with like the tragedy of him. But it the seeds are planted here fully for that. And you know, him trying to save his mom is like truly like the catalyst of like his character and yeah. all that. It's really profound what they do with that.
Yeah. I think that it's really interesting, like going back to us just like praising George Lucas for being a genius. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting when you like look at these like huge directors, like directors that specifically make like such big movies that are like so like heavy with like special effects and stuff, and like the ones that are like really 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 good at like making a tangible human element to it, like I don't know, I've become very 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 James Cameron pilled over the past like 2 years, like because yeah. Sean obviously is the world's biggest Avatar fan, and like it was almost like a joke at first, but like not really, like I'm so James Cameron pilled, like I just saw The Abyss for the first time like a few weeks ago, I saw True Lies like a few months ago, and it's very funny how like I feel like James Cameron's movies, it's like you can watch all of them and just be like, oh, he's divorced and he knows that he's a shitty husband. Like you could just tell by like watching all his movies, and it's like he's clearly trying to like yeah. say the same thing in all of them. And then like George Lucas is just like, there's just this like sad like yearning to them that like even like American Graffiti, like it's like yearning for like childhood, like yearning to like stay as a teen like in the place where you are, like, and I feel like also just like the whole spirituality element, like I feel like I don't know, like they're just so, I don't know, Star Wars is about the yearning.
No, it is. It really, I mean,
whether it be like romantic or like familial or like yearning for like
purpose, like
am I good or evil, like you know.
I mean, that's why I thought like up until Rise of Skywalker I found Rey especially to be such a compelling character, because I feel like she really embodied that, you know, a person who
what was she, know, she was like Palpatine's granddaughter or some shit.
Yeah. And okay. I mean, and, yeah. and, I'm like, yeah. But
when you boil it down to that, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I actually love Rey as a character. I was so obsessed with her, as a character. I really like got fully pilled back, you know, when those movies were coming out. And I still do. I love Rey, even with that stupid ass twist. Like I love Daisy Ridley and I love all that stuff. But there was something about like The Force Awakens where she was just completely like a mysterious character with like no baggage attached to her. She was just kind of like carving out her own place. And that's why I thought like The Last Jedi with the twist of like, you know, she actually comes from no lineage, like with all the like speculation of like, is she a Kenobi? Is she Luke's daughter? Is she, you know, like, you know, whatever, like all these like different theories of who she was, and to have it be nobody, she's just strong in the Force and she has to prove that to herself and everyone that's around her by not, you know, like having to, you know, associate with a title or anything. She just has to like believe in herself. And I thought that was like such a beautiful thing, like for someone who like came from nothing, came from like the worst upbringing to like, you know, pave a path for yourself to be an ultimate hero with no like actual inheritance or reason to, you know, no entitlement the way that Ben, you know, Kylo Ren had it, you know, that's so like beautiful. You know what I mean? Like that's such a beautiful, like poetic thing for a Star Wars movie to be about. And that just goes to like, yeah, like Star Wars is about longing. It's like about trying to find your place and to find like purpose and like a higher calling, which I find to be so like, there's something romantic about it. It's like, it's so romantic, like just,
or just like yearning for like another person that like understands you or is like you. Like, I feel like that's what a lot of Rey and Kylo Ren's like weird connection came from. Like, it's just,
I mean, that's, we could do like an emergency, like, pot on that. But yeah, like, that's on where Rise the last
Skywalker
Jedi was so
or like
great.
Reylo, I mean, the Reylo ship in general.
I mean, I mean, I don't know. I would specifically say The Last Jedi, but admittedly, Rise of Skywalker, for all of its issues, it does have some good, like, Reylo stuff in it, too. It's just, like, I find that relationship so fascinating because it's, like, the... It goes past, like, will they, won't they, you know, lovers to enemies. It's just, like, not even, like, a forbidden love. It's just, like, something they both know can't happen, but there's just, like, this undeniable, like... like connection there that neither of them can deny, and yet each path that they're on calls them in different directions where they ultimately either have to kiss or fight. And it's just like, it's so it's great until it isn't. It's
I mean,
really,
I just want to kiss Adam Driver, like, that's
yeah, no, I mean, I get it, he's yeah, I get it. But yeah, no, anyways, which, by the way, going back to, like, you know, with Adam Driver, he's, in retrospect, casting him as, like, the grandson of Hayden Christensen is, like, that's so inspired casting. Like, that is so his grandson. That is so his grandson. It's perfect.
Yeah. In high school, up until, like, a few years ago, I had a framed, like, Rolling Stone cover on my wall, because it was, like, Lord, like, it was, like, when Lord's first album came out.
Right.
And on the cover in the corner, it said, like, Adam Driver, who is the mystery hunk from Girls? And I was like, well, just you wait. This were, like, 2013 or something. 2012.
Yeah, back when the Girls was first popping off.
Back when Adam Driver was simply a freak and Girls that, like, drank, like, warm milk.
I remember when Girls was coming out, or, like, when it was first airing, and I think they announced that he was Kylo Ren in, like, 2013,
mm-hmm.
if not, like, early 2014. But I remember around that era, because I was watching Girls around that time, and I was like,
he
wow.
randomly gets buff.
Right. Yeah,
it's very funny.
Yeah, because he's just kind of like a, not even scrawny, but just kind of like a lanky dude until that point, which I think is funny. Yeah, no, he's I remember, like, when I found out who was in the movie, I was just like, man, this is, like, just, this is really crazy. I remember there was, like, a fan poster of Episode 7, and it just had, like, every role completely wrong. It was just, like, it had, like, Daisy Ridley paint as, like, a Padme type character, Finn as Jedi, Adam Driver was, like, Boba Fett, and Max von Sydow was, like, a Jedi, and I'm like, he gets killed in the first scene, like, it's like in an Andy Serkis is, like, a Jedi, and I'm like, dude, come on, like, it's so funny, like, looking back at those fan posters in retrospect. I fully thought, like, Lupita Nyong'o was gonna be, like, a live action character. No, it's just Maz Kanata, like, it's yeah. Going back to, like, how cool this movie is, like, Attack of the Clones, before I, like, forget about it, like, there's, like, a little, like the little set piece in this movie where they're on the factory in Geonosis, and
I have a note about
it. I think it's, like, one of my favorite. Everything from, like, that point forward, like, from the moment they get chained up by Dooku to, like, the ending, like, everything in that section of the movie is, like, some of my favorite Star Wars stuff ever. I love it so much.
Yeah. I wrote that a person being stuck on a production line conveyor belt with, like, a big smashing thing, like, them going closer to it, I feel like is, like, so Zillennial canon.
Very.
But I'm always, like, a sucker for that, like, I don't know, I feel like that's, like, a very, like, satisfying thing. Like, they do it in, like, The Brave Little Toaster, I'm pretty sure. They do it in, like, Toy Story 3. They do it in one of the Child's Play movies. I think Child's Play 2.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say Toy Story 2 and 3, because even 2 has, it's not the same as, like, a big factory thing, but they're on the airport conveyor belt in that one. Mm-hmm. All the like the baggage is like flying at them and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I the biggest one I could recall for Zillion and Canada was Robots, if you remember that.
Yeah.
When they're in the like I mean it's basically literally the scene from this movie. I think they're actually like kind of parodying it in that movie. Because it's like literally the same thing where like they get Finn, like the Robin Williams character gets like stuck. Like the same way that like Anakin's arm gets stuck, which by the way, the like the fake out with his like arm getting stuck, the one that he gets cut off, like,
yeah,
because everyone knows it's gonna happen, and you fully think it's gonna happen in that moment, and then the fact that he gets away with it is great. And then also like fucking 3PO getting his like head put on a droid's body and vice versa.
See, that's like the kind of silly comedy that I'm like, okay, that's what Star Wars is.
It's first of all, it's fucking funny. It's like. It's just like he becomes like a war criminal for 5 minutes. And it's like
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, it's really funny. There's just so much about this that I like. I love that entire set piece. It's so like it's thrilling, it's exciting, it's like but also like again, like just the design of it, it's just really like this is what blockbuster filmmaking should be about, I think. Like it's so like I could gush about it all day. Like the factory scene alone, I think is great. Like I remember it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid because I really thought like someone was gonna die when I first saw it. Like I really felt like the stakes of it. Of course, my stupid ass when I was like 5 or 6, I didn't realize like no, dumbass, they can't die because they're Luke and Leia's parents. Yeah. but you know, I felt the stakes of it when I was a kid. And every time I watch it, even though I know the outcome, I still feel like, because they get so close to the wire with it, you know what I mean?
Mm.
That it, I don't know. There's just something about it. And also, like, Minority Report. I don't know if this or Minority Report came out first. I think it was the same year.
Mm-hmm.
But Minority Report has, like a factory scene like this, too. I was watching that recently, and, like, it's, like, basically the same thing with Tom Cruise, like, kind of, like, fly like rolling through like a factory trying not to get like killed by machines.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about like early, you're right, it's so Z canon. Like there's so many movies about it now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, like Monsters Inc. does it too. Like
Monsters Inc. does it, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, like with the doors and everything. Like the
No, like with like Boo going into the trash compactor.
Oh yeah, right. Shit. Yeah, no, that's...
I felt like I would be, like, someday stuck on a conveyor belt. Like, when I was a kid, I was like, what if I'm in that situation?
You're like, you know. I really thought, like, conveyor belts would be a bigger issue in my life than it turned out to be.
Exactly.
But yeah, honestly, though, the big reason why I loved this movie when I was a kid, and I still find it so enjoyable now. Like I said, I think the third act is, like, just, as a Star Wars fan, it's so fun to watch. Seeing all the Jedi on Geonosis and, like, fighting, like, on a big, like, gladiator arena is, like, so cool. When I was watching with Victoria on Saturday, because she only watched it the last, like, 30 minutes with me, but I... when Mace Windu comes out and he's like holding Count Dooku and like, you know, with the lightsaber and like the Star Wars theme kicks in and like all the Jedi come out and like light up their lightsabers, I just went like, I hit it with a let's fucking go, you know, I put my hand in there.
Yeah, Avengers Endgame wishes.
Honestly, it's just like this was like my OG like Endgame moment, because I just, yeah, it was so exciting to watch this when I was a kid. And, like, for this to be my introduction to, like, Jedis and stuff. Because, yeah, again, I saw Phantom Menace, but it was really this movie that made me be like, oh, wait. Because, like, Phantom Menace, like, made me think, oh, yeah, pod racing is cool, you know? Like, yeah. Lightsabers individually are cool. But this movie made me go, like, oh, Jedis are cool. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the collective, Jedi.
Yeah,
exactly. Like the whole, and also like just like the mythology of the Jedi, like, you know, the Jedi robes, like the order, their like their rules, their, you know, like everything about that. Like I fell in love with like the deeper meaning of everything when I watched this movie. Which I think was just absolutely that madman's intentions. Like he knew he had us like hook, line, and sinker with that. Like he introduced us to pod racing. He got us in that way. He got us with the flashy lightsabers, and then he went full Greek tragedy with the third one. So he knew what he was doing. But yeah, I don't know. I loved this so much when I was younger, and it still holds up today because I'm still like watching it just completely like a stupid little kid, just like giggling and like clapping at the screen. Cause it just brings back so many fond memories to me. Like I love, it's just like space, like bonanza. Like it's just, but it's great. It's the perfect version of what it's trying to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only other note that I really have for this specific movie is about the Yoda fight scene. right. I said the tower is falling, like him knocking them over is just straight up right out of Lego Star Wars. Like,
it's so funny.
That maneuver is just so like video game to me. Yeah. Also, I wrote Yoda lightsaber little bitch flipping around. He just goes crazy.
He does. Yeah. He really
he also, is comedic. He looks really good.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
I usually am like, oh, cool. Like the puppet Yoda. Like, I love like that. He is crazy. Like there was like a close up shot, like one of the first times that you see him. And I'm like, oh, he looks like a real like thing.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's a lot of like the prequels that look really good, but like I think especially like the before the Jedi like come out and fight, like all the little creatures that they have to fight in the arena, like the little like one of them like kind of looks like a big iguana or something. Mm-hmm. And like the other one kind of looks like a glorified tiger, like a white tiger or something. But yeah, they all look like really cool and like detailed, but nothing can match like the like little like facial like responses from Yoda and like the details like on his like white hair and like the wrinkles on his face. Like there is just a lot of like I don't know, there's a lot of detail there that I appreciate.
Yeah, when this first started I was like, it doesn't have the same like warmth as Phantom Menace, and I know it's because this is digital and Phantom Menace was shot mostly on film,
right?
And it definitely, like, loses a lot of that kind of coziness to me. But definitely, I think it kind of, like, which I feel like I always see people saying this. Like, people were saying this about, like, Megalopolis, too, like, the trailer. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they're, like, using, like, digital filmmaking to like it's like full potential or whatever. I feel like I never really understood that until I like rewatched like this.
I think that's what like George Lucas, James Cameron too, especially. Yeah. You know, he's a big proponent of you know, just the like not the limits, but like
pushing technology. Yeah,
I think like, that's a really cool thing. You know, I think Jordan Peele is doing a really great job with that right now. Like, but Tom Cruise, obviously. I think this is very much like one of the best like digital creations of all time. Because mm-hmm. I mean, ILM in general, like you know, the mm-hmm. Lucasfilm like VFX team. Which by the way, shout out to the documentary Light and Magic on Disney Plus. It's fantastic. If you think what ILM does is cool and you want to like learn more about them, I cannot recommend the documentary series Light and Magic enough. It's only like 5 episodes, but it's just like really cool to see what they do, what they're about, how they started, how they each like era of filmmaking that they went through. It's so cool. But yeah, it what they accomplish here is just like it's really staggering, and how much it like holds up. Phantom Menace does hold up a lot, but 2 and 3 especially, just visually, especially like the, I mean, we'll get to it next week, but like the opening sequence of 3, it just like watching that, I'm like, oh my god, like this looks better than like most stuff today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's, I know it's like, you know, cool to say that because it feels like a slight on other movies. Like, even if other movies like can look good, but there's something about a 20-year-old movie that still looks like accessible and tangible and like real, that it's just like you can't beat that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I don't know if that, like, the movies I'm seeing today that I think look good are going to work in 20 years. But this one does. It already does.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's really great. There's just something, like, but again, like, they really, like, measured out with, like, also practical effects and, like, practical shots and practical locations. Because, like, the final shot of this movie, like, where they're on the lakeside, it's one of the most beautiful final shots. Like, it's so gorgeous. And it's completely real. Like, for all the CGI in this movie, they end on it like a real shot with no effects. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's so, like, deeply sad, too, that it's ending on that. Like, going back to Anakin's arc, it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Here we go.
Yeah. And also, like, the way that it parallels, like, the... Because, you know, the way he tries to, like, make it, you know, poetry, it rhymes with the original trilogy. Like, Empire Strikes Back, like, ends in a very like sad but hopeful place, and same thing with this, but the roles are kind of reversed. They in Empire, he loses but he wins, you know what I mean? Like, he loses an arm, he loses by finding out that Vader's his father, but he wins because he finds connection with Leia. He loses Han, but he gains an ally with Lando. You know, he lost the battle today, but he also has the entire fleet of the Rebel Alliance behind him. And they're looking out at the star system with the potential of, you know, they lost today, but they can win tomorrow. You know,
it's kind of like how Last Jedi ends, too, because it's like, a revolution is like based on like hope or whatever. And the last frame is like all of them together. That's really interesting.
Yeah, Last Jedi is great because it's just like, you know, it's, I mean, it just goes to, that's why anyone that says that like Luke Skywalker is wasted in that movie is like a fucking idiot to me, because he literally single-handedly, I mean, because anyone that tells me that they do Luke Skywalker dirty in that movie is like, you don't know what you're talking about.
An idiot. Like,
first of all.
Stupid. Idiot.
On a lore level.
Yeah.
On a lore level, like, force projection is like one of the hardest things for a Jedi to do. It's something that like even Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan could not accomplish.
Yeah.
And the fact that Luke Skywalker does that in Last Jedi just instantly proves, okay, it's canon. He's like the most powerful Jedi that's ever lived. And he saved the entire Rebel Alliance in the process. But also deeper than that, you know what, again, like the final shelf, like the kid with the broom, like looking up at the sky, holding up like a lightsaber, and he's holding the Alliance ring on his you know, he has it on his finger. It's, I mean, you know, it goes deeper than that. It's like, it's not even just about saving the Rebel Alliance. He inspired an entire galaxy to be better, to hope for more, and not accept oppression, which is like, oh my god. Like, I mean, I don't, dude, like, anyone that hates that movie, shut the fuck up. Like, it's just like,
yeah, I literally hate anybody who hates that movie. Literally, so like, you're a bad person if you hate that movie. Like, I don't feel that way about a lot of things, but like, because like, okay, not even like the quality of the movie, but there's just so much like underlying, like, I know what you feel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people that hate that movie, they have like ulterior motives. And it's like, okay, well, how do you feel about like women? Like, how do you, like, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of women myself, but I do really like The Last Jedi.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I guess you can't really like tell.
No, but I get where you're coming from. Yeah. Cause
no, because like the haters are always coming for like Kelly Marie Tran and stuff. And it's like,
Right. Yeah. I hate to generalize, because I'm sure there are nice people.
I literally love to generalize.
But in the grand scheme of things, you're a bad person if you don't like it. Yeah, anyways. Exactly. But yeah, I don't know. There's But yeah, I mean, just going back to that, like, you know, Empire ends that way, Last Jedi ends that way, but it's kind of flipped in this one where it's like they win mm-hmm. at the end of this one, you know, like they do have the upper hand, but whereas
it's still,
you know,
so
like,
sad.
Luke wins in yeah. Empire, or like Luke loses an Empire, and but he gets like a mild one at the end with like a glimmer of hope. He, Anakin, Padme, the Jedi win in this one, in quotations, but again, just going back to your point, like, you know where it ends, so there's like a hint of sadness, like, you know the next chapter is the downfall of everything, mm-hmm. and there is just like, and again, that goes back to John Williams' amazing score, like, there's a hint of sadness in the score. It starts like sweeping and romantic, but then there's like an eerie kind of like, oh, like, I mean, it's just it's perfect. It's so great. It's really, really, really great. This whole trilogy is a perfect like Greek tragedy, and it's just it's fantastic. I'm fully like prequel pilled at this point. I'm so proud of myself for like doing the full circle on it and coming back around, because I feel like my inner child has been like fulfilled.
You know, what else is there to say but begun the Clone War has?
Yes. It goes hard as hell. What can I say? What is there to say other than it goes hard as hell? Yeah, it's a good one. And next week is even better, if I may say. So
Yeah. Two very interesting anecdotes, not about like the movie itself, but the trailer for this first dropped on a Phantom Menace DVD release or also on Monsters, Inc. in theaters. There was third teaser trailer on Harry Potter, the first one. And it says, just like its predecessor, fans paid full admission at the theaters just to see it. The next trailer premiered on Fox between Malcolm in the Middle and The X-Files.
Wow.
That's kind of crazy. Malcolm in the Middle. Like, people must have been tuned in. And then it says that there was a firm that predicted before the film's release that U.S. companies could lose more than $319 million in productivity due to employees calling in sick and going to see the movie.
Jesus.
Yeah. And another thing that I found really interesting, just as somebody who I never talk about work on here, I don't know. As somebody who used to work for the Tribeca Film Festival, this premiered at the first Tribeca Film Festival, which I had no idea, as fundraiser for the Children's Aid Society.
Wow, I had no clue.
That's interesting. Yeah,
I don't have like a lot of like anecdotes about like the nostalgia or like the marketing or anything, because like I said, even when I was like, I can remember watching this for the first time, but that was like on DVD, so like a lot of the marketing kind of like, you know, went past me. Like, I think because when this was in theaters, I think I was still a little too young to fully like grasp Star Wars. I wasn't really at a good age for it until this came on DVD. I think I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but my first like Star Wars toys were like Clone Wars action figures. And oh yeah, I did mention that, because it's it was about the Clone Wars TV show, but not the 2008 one, the one before that, from the Samurai Jack creator. And I think that's what kind of inspired me to like go watch the movies as a kid. But I do remember having like a Jango Fett action figure. I remember having like an Anakin action figure, and I remember it was from this one because he still had like the Padawan braid on the mm-hmm. the toy. So I know it was from this one, and I had an Obi-Wan, and I think I had a Yoda too, if I'm not mistaken. And I definitely. I definitely had a Yoda lightsaber from this movie when I was a kid. Because I remember it was a battery. It was a battery powered operator where you had to insert the batteries in like the hilt of the lightsaber. and it would like you would press the red button and it would like glow up red, and then it, but also like when you would hit it with another lightsaber, it would like make the noise, which I thought was so cool when I was a kid. So
yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll talk more about like the merchandising next week for Revenge of the Sith, because there is so much to talk about for that one, and I actually like remember it for that one. There is so much to discuss there. But yeah, no, Revenge Attack of the Clones. Yeah, there's a lot there too.
Yeah, you know, I liked it. I was a little bit bored while watching it, but just discussing it makes me appreciate it a lot more. So
that's how it goes. Like you're a little bit bored when you watch it, but then you think about it, you're like, wait, no, that's pretty good. And then you rewatch it a few years later, you're like, wait, this is incredible. Like that's kind of how it goes sometimes. That's where I'm at now. I'm like, no, this is awesome. So yeah. Any final notes?
No. I wrote who the fuck would vote in Jar Jar, but then I forgot that Padme was kind of like, oh yeah, you're in charge.
Yeah. She's like, hey, I'm gonna go with my boyfriend. Can you fucking keep the Senate alive? You fucking
hold
idiot.
Hold the fort down. He has like a crazy ass cape situation too.
Yeah. In both, like in all movies, he, like in all three movies, or like in this one, and actually the next one, he just like, he has like a weird like chancellor vibe. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like you're fucking Jar Jar Binks. My only note for this movie when I was watching it was, somehow Watto has returned.
Oh, he has a cool hat now too. I wrote a note. He has a little hat. That's new.
Cool hat.
Yeah.
Classic Watto moment.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I just googled it because I had to be reminded what a stupid little hat looks like. Why did they give him a hat?
It's like a metal like plate too. Wait, you know what I think it might be? Those little like droid guys that had like the metal like round heads that were like fixing the pods like during the pod racing scene.
Yeah.
I fear that it might be a recycled head of a droid that he's wearing as a hat.
R.I.P. R.I.P. to that droid. I personally wouldn't have let that happen, but I fear
that is the situation.
Oh, Watto, what are we gonna do with you? All right. Well, if that's it, I guess we'll see you guys next week, but until then, you guys can follow me on Tatooine at Adam_NodSandler and on Kamino and Geonosis and the cinesoup.com. That's my website. And also find me playing Lego Star Wars next week, because I'm gonna totally play Revenge of the Sith before the pod. And yeah, because then now I have like the urge to just play Lego Star Wars entirely, to, you know, to lead up to that.
Yeah, me too, honestly. You can follow me on Twitter at Garlic Emoji. You can follow us on Twitter at Zillennial Canon, on Instagram at The Zillennial Canon, and give us some ratings and some reviews.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
Well. Until next time. Bye, Jedi Knights.